This week on It's So Bad, we are adding one of legitimately the best games of all time to our list in the 3D platformer for the Nintendo 64, Super Mario 64, on It's So Bad. And yes, welcome back, Dan, Steve, and Chris,
hey,
to the podcast.
Pleasure as always.
Gentlemen, how are you?
How are you doing?
Fabulous.
Yeah, I'm doing all right. Ready to talk some Mario 64.
I guess I'm doing okay. Yeah?
Doing good. Okay, good. We're here. We are talking about Super Mario 64, a game that came out in September 29th of 1996. I got this for my birthday when I was 13 years old. It was a launch title for the Nintendo 64. The other launch game for the Nintendo 64, anybody? Anybody?
Pilot Wings 64. Mm-hmm. I listened to the Pilot Wings episode, and that's why I know that.
So we are adding...
I lived it. I lived it, Steve.
I lived it too, but I didn't remember it.
All right.
I was alive in 1996.
Yeah, I know. I actually got this game on the 27th of September. It came out on the 29th.
Well, how'd you do that?
Toys R Us did not observe release dates back in the day, and so they would release games and systems before they actually launched. And I had heard a rumor through the grapevine of my school that originated with one Richard Chase, who was here in our studio.
Was that the kid in the coma?
Yes, that was the kid in the coma. That said, there was games at Toys R Us. They already got a shipment of N64s, and I received my N64 2 days early from Toys R Us.
That's that insider knowledge.
Absolutely.
Yes. What's wrong with that?
You got to pour one out for that Toys R Us, because that's gone now.
Yeah, I know. So wow. I got the N64 as well as Pilot Wings and Super Mario 64. I felt like a rich kid when that happened in 1996. When did you all get your N64s? Because you all had N64s.
I got my Nintendo 64 on December 25th of 1996. It was, I had found it when I went upstairs to get my, my Christmas decorations for my Christmas tree and saw it up in the attic and, you know, gave myself a little fist bump and, you know, brought
Did you actually give yourself a fist bump?
No, it was more like a what's his name, Zach Morris, like, yes,
you know. A fist pump.
A fist pump, yes. would be the term, yes. And, you know, made my way downstairs and, man, was running on fucking full for the remainder of December.
I will say, like, people vividly remember when they received this. I think this was, for our generation at least, it's like a moment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I remember finding it before... my mom had given it to us for Christmas and just being ecstatic knowing that in just a few weeks I would be playing this.
Steve, when did you get yours?
I didn't get an N64 until 1998, but I did play this game because actually my cousin, every year we'd go to his house for Christmas and he always had the latest video game or video game system at that time. So I remember very vividly Christmas in 96 going over to his house and playing this for the first time. And being like, I need to get an N64. And I was about to get a PlayStation, which I had before the N64.
Mm-hmm.
And because for the longest time, my parents didn't let me have games at all. So right. I got a PlayStation, and then I caught up to 64 later, because that was the one to own.
Right. I did the opposite. I had the N64, and then I was like, oh, Resident Evil looks more mature. I'm going to go grab that.
Yeah.
But Chris, where did you...
I also got this at Christmas. And so I got the N64 at Christmas with Mario. And then I also had Chaz the Empire in one other... I think I had at least one of the launch title at Christmas.
So, yeah. So by Christmas, I'm trying to think of the other big games that
came
out.
Wave Race was one that I got that Christmas.
Oh, really?
It was, we got the Star Wars game, Mario, and Wave Race.
Mm.
So I know Shadows of the Empire was the big, the big like Christmas game for 1996.
That was 1996. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So Shadows of the Empire with Dash Rendar.
Love that game.
Yeah. Fantastic game.
That game's terrible.
No, it's not.
Go back and try to play that game.
Oh no, I have doubt that it's unplayable.
I have played it, and the nostalgia alone just makes me giggle. You know, tying up the big.
Dude, there's some...
Whatever fucking robots.
AT-ATs? There.
When you talk about that... I don't want to get too sidetracked on this, but like that first Snow Speeder level being realized in full 3D, like the N64 was doing, like that was just...
That was mind-blowing.
Just a mind-blowing...
Right.
Yeah.
But the one thing that I'll say about it is that once you get into some of those levels with the platforming, like on the train, it's like... Right. IG88 IG88 level and the garbage dump. Yeah.
Even back then, it was kind of difficult to play. It was not the best mechanical game.
But I mean, this is what leads us into our discussion about Super Mario 64 and kind of why it's so good is that it still holds up as a platformer. It's really well designed. It was developed by Nintendo EAD, published by Nintendo, designed by Shigeru Miyamoto, Yoshiaki Koizumi, Takashi and Tezuka, and music by Koji Kondo. Koji Kondo is the guy who came up with the Super Mario Brothers theme that everybody knows and loves. He did the Legend of Zelda theme. Mm-hmm. He is a genius musically for Nintendo music. And of course, Shigeru Miyamoto, literally everybody who knows anything about video games knows who Shigeru Miyamoto is. So it's a lot of, they got the heavy hitters of this, making this game. Sold over 11 million copies. Critically known as one of the best and most important games of all time. So this is the game. It's the game. And just to put this into context, why it's so revolutionary is that PlayStation came out in November of 1995, so 1 year earlier. Before that, what came out for it were games like Resident Evil, you had Twisted Metal, you had Wipeout, you had Crash Bandicoot. Nights into Dreams came out a month before Super Mario 64, and those were kind of like the big 3D games. You had Tomb Raider came out after this. Pandemonium was a game that came out after this as well, which were similar 3D games, but those games didn't do what Super Mario 64 did with the camera in 3D, and that's kind of why it was so revolutionary, is that it was filmed, it makes it seem like it's somebody with a camera that's filming the character, then you can move around the character, as opposed to it being a fixed camera, like Resident Evil.
Well, it is. They have the guy in the cloud.
Yeah.
Well, it's not fixed. The camera you can move.
No, he was saying it is... filmed,
what,
like,
right, but what you said about this somebody filming it,
that's exactly what they were going for, right. And they made it real,
exactly. So, you can use the C whatever and right.
In my head, I like to think the way, because it's being filmed, I like to think it's like a, not only is it a Mario game, it's also a Super Smash TV game.
Super Smash TV.
Yeah.
How does that fit in?
Because they're filming, you know, this player, Mario.
Yes.
On the game.
Okay.
Show, like Smash TV, being in this deadly situation. It's being filmed for someone else's entertainment. People are going to be watching the camera.
I think all Mario Brothers games are sort of supposed to be like plays or like TV shows or whatever.
Sure.
So Super Mario Brothers 3 has a curtain that comes down at the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And I think Super Mario Brothers Super Mario World has a lot of aspects that lead it to be, it's like cutouts, like somebody made a play. That's why you see bolts on some of the, like the platforms you have to jump on, because it's supposed to be like a stage drama. And even when Nintendo published GoldenEye, and if we go back to that episode, at the end of the day, they didn't want to include blood, and they wanted to have everybody shaking hands at the end, because it was a Nintendo published game, and Rare made it to show that it was just they were just acting, and they were just all actors in a movie.
Listen, you took my Smash TV theory very serious.
At the end of the day, Super Mario Brothers 3, like they actually, I think there's a lot of elements aesthetically that make it seem like it's supposed to be a stage play, as well as Super Mario World, and it makes sense. Like to them to use the camera was revolutionary, but at the same time, it leads into their continuing that aspect from the other games.
Right, it's totally like it's such an early aspect of how art was influenced in games, you know, to, you know, not necessarily Mario 64, but back to Mario 2 and Mario 3 with the curtains and stuff like that. I always thought that was a really cool, you know, way to introduce you into the level.
Right. Yeah, I mean, this game, it's pretty crazy what came out around this game. There were 30 NES games released, SNES games released after Super Mario 64. So after Super Mario 64 came out, Kirby Superstar comes out, Donkey Kong Country 3, Vector Man 2 comes out, Genesis games. Like, there's, like, all these games came out after Super Mario 64. Like, I think that's just...
Donkey Kong Country 3 came out after?
After Super Mario, Super Mario 64.
That's nuts.
Shortly after Super Mario 64 in January is when Final Fantasy 7 came out. And that kind of changed. But that even that had a fixed camera. Like, it wasn't true 3D. Like, this game, every 3D game now owes a debt of gratitude to, or at least third-person 3D games owes a debt of gratitude to Super Mario 64 in some way, shape, or form. Just because you can move the camera and you can kind of, and the way the camera moves with you if you go into, like, a corner is very much different from a lot of games that happened at the time. It's literally, this game is very much about your movement abilities and also the way the camera moves in a 3D environment. And it was like, at the time, there's like a handful of games that I look at and my mind was absolutely fucking blown when I looked at it, when I started playing this game. One of those games is Super Mario 64. I could think, like, Wii Sports is on that level in some regards.
Sure. Mm. Yeah.
But I can't think, does anybody else have like games that like just fucking blew their mind when they first came out?
I mean, at the time, Super Mario World for Super NES, but, you know, that was me with a 7-year-old brain, you know, seeing, oh my goodness, you know, here we go. Next is Yoshi and the dinosaur, but, you know, I couldn't really think of anything that made me, you know, realize things are changing as much as Mario 64.
Yeah, I think, like, as it being a launch game for 64, too, like, this is the game that showed you Nintendo 64. So this is the game that showed you this whole new 3D technology that was going to be the future of games. So it definitely blew my mind away. Yep. I think, like, Halo, when I first played Halo for the first time on Xbox, I was like, these are graphics I've never seen. I've never played a shooting game where you had this freedom of movement and this just kind of intuitiveness. And I think that was a whole new level of gameplay and technology at the time. And Mario was exactly that in 1996. Like, this is not how games are played, really. Like, having that camera fall around, like, having this whole open environment in three dimensions you can just explore and, oh, I'm going to go down here and down here and down here. And they've, like, rendered all these environments.
Yeah, boom. I think for me it's Mario, Final Fantasy VII, and, like, maybe, like, Grand Theft Auto 3, and, like, just, like, the sense of, like, the immersiveness that you could have with the game. Like, I mean, Final Fantasy VII was much different in the sense, like, you didn't have, like, this, like, massive open world, but, like, I think just, like, the scope and the, like, you realize, like, how big games could be, I think, with a game like Final Fantasy VII. Then you had, like, Grand Theft Auto 3, which I think was, like, oh, like, this is, like, how, like, living... a living, breathing world could be carried out in video games.
No, and for me with Grand Theft Auto 3, it that felt like Mario.
Yeah.
You know, that was like a, oh man.
Yeah.
You know, this is a game changer.
That was taking Super Mario Brothers and being like, oh, let's make it mature so you can shoot people and kill hookers and shit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's like an early open world game, essentially. Right. Like, you can go anywhere. You're in this castle. You're in Bowser's castle. Like, go explore. See what's behind this door? Oh, it's a whole sand, you know, desert level.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, this game was originally conceived of as Super Mario FX using the Super FX chip for SNES, so Super Nintendo, during the development of Star Fox. So it was developed all the way back then, like, I think it was 91 or 92 is when they started developing Super Mario 64, so it took about 4 or 5 years to develop the game.
Wow.
So originally, too, it wasn't designed by... The prototype that they made was not designed by Nintendo. It was designed by the people who made Star Fox, which was Argonaut Software, the people who tried to make it 3D. They made a concept of Super Mario 64. It would actually eventually become the game called Croc. For PlayStation. Croc for PlayStation is actually a Yoshi game, and they just subbed out Yoshi and they may have put in a crocodile, mm-hmm. which is really weird and interesting. But development started in earnest on actual Super Mario 64 when they were like, this is Super Mario 64. 15 people in the development team made it. So it's very, if you think about it in today's terms,
15 levels.
There's like, is there only 15 levels?
I think so.
Oh, wow. 15 developers.
Besides the castle.
Okay. 15 developers compared to today's where they have like hundreds of people across multiple locations working on a game. It's still insane for me to think about, even though we've talked about this on a few different episodes. But what particularly, for you guys, what stands out? What do you remember most in terms of gameplay or stages or enemies?
Without a doubt in my mind, There's two that stand out to me, and it is the penguin race down the slide. I think that's the third world.
Definitely.
It might be later, but that penguin race, it was one of those things where you traded controls with your friends, your brothers, your sisters. I remember my dad playing it, and it was just one of those things like, okay, I'm going to see if I can do it. I'm going to see if I can do it. And everybody trying it initially and getting it done. And another one that, you know, obviously wasn't that much more exciting was the gold rabbit in the basement and trying to catch him and get the star for just catching the gold rabbit that was running on the loose in the castle. It wasn't associated with a level in particular, but it was just that.
They brought that back for Super Mario Odyssey.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, they brought back the entire... There's a spoilers for people, jump ahead. But if you beat the game, Super Mario Odyssey, you unlock the castle from Super Mario 64, and you can walk around the outside. And there's a whole level that's based on the outside of the Super Mario 64 castle.
That's pretty cool. I have not played Super Mario Odyssey, but that's good to know.
About that. And there's a suit you can put on that puts you into polygonal Super Mario 64 in Super Mario Odyssey. It's pretty good.
That's sweet.
Yeah.
That's on my list. I have that game. I'm ready to play it.
Yeah, it's good. It's very good.
I'll get to it soon. I remember the first world just so vividly because I didn't have 64 for the first couple of years. So every time I played it, I was playing it at Toys R Us or at my cousin's house on Christmas. Like, I only had limited opportunities to play this game until years later, and I played it. And I played it through once, but I don't remember it as much as for the however 5 to 10 times I played it, just doing that world over and over again, trying to go up that mountain, the giant ball that rolls down and you have to run down the mountain.
Yes.
You know, unlocking the cannon and shooting yourself up there. So yeah, that just very vividly stuck in my head.
That first level. That first level, Bomb Battlefield.
Yeah, yeah.
It's pretty emblematic of the way Nintendo designs first levels, especially they're like really good games. Well, the first level will take you through how you play the game.
Right.
Exactly.
So that level is one of the only levels in the game where you can't fall to your death.
Oh, really?
It's impossible for you to fall to your death in that level. And that's to introduce you to 3D, to the 3D environment.
Yeah.
So that if you fall, you can get back up and try whatever you wanted to do again. Mm. And they also have a path that goes right to the first objective.
Right.
So you go down the path to the King Babam or whatever at the top.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very simple layout. And they just want you to experiment in this 3D environment because this is the first time you're going to be there.
Yeah.
This
and that, for me, for not having played a lot of video games before this came out, like this was kind of an introduction to video games and an introduction to 3D environments too.
Right.
Like it was like, oh, I'm just going to go walk around. And like, if I get a star or some coins, like that's fine, but I'm just kind of walking around in 3D space. That's it.
Yeah.
I mean, I was going to say the exact same thing. Like that first Babam level, I think is just so like that completely, like, I mean, for Dan and I, who are a little bit older than you, I think like we had been playing like Nintendo and Super Nintendo up to that point, and like you had like very restricted gameplay in a sense. But when you get to Mario 64, and like you have this like very open level that like in all these mechanics that you can just kind of explore a world with, and as Mike just said, like you can't die like from jumping off a cliff or anything like that. You can like pick up like the Bomb King, go like, well, I'm gonna come off the platform where I'm supposed to like fight the Bomb King. I can carry him all the way down the mountain if I want to. Now he's just gonna jump back up once you drop him. But it was like the fact that you could do that in a game and having that freedom, like you never had that freedom right. before in a game. And that is, I just remember like being a kid going, like, I was like, this is like mind blowing to me, like to have like this freedom and the, like I'm like basically limited by my imagination as to what I want to do in this level in this game.
It's really super difficult to describe this game and what it did for 3D games to people who weren't playing video games or people who played video, started playing video games after this era, because there is, people take for granted the fact that you can move the camera with the right stick now. For every game, pretty mm-hmm. much. When there was a time period where it was really fucking difficult for a long time to figure out how to move cameras. Like, for example, last year I played Beyond Good and Evil, which was a GameCube game, or came out on PS2 too, and that game's camera was terrible. Like, straight up terrible. Like, you would go into corners and you would lose yourself. Like, you couldn't see yourself or your character because the camera would be obscured, so you couldn't get in there. And the way Nintendo was able to do it years in advance to have a really good camera was like crazy. Also, I mentioned earlier the freedom of movement, and there's a lot of ways in which you can move in this game. So there's jumping, there's sliding, there's like far jumping and all this, and there's ways you can use your momentum to go backwards. So there's just the way that you can explore the 3D environment really makes this game a standout. So there's 120 stars you can get, and it's really allows you to really explore. It provides a depth of gameplay around and a lot of replayability for you to, and specific challenges for you to get better. And it's a very deep game. It takes a lot of hours in order to get to 120 stars. So it provides you with a very solid experience and a lot of hours you have to put into the game. Anybody here get to 120 stars?
Yes.
No,
I think what was it? You could if you got to 70 stars.
I think it was 70 or 80. Yeah,
was it?
Yeah, you could beat the game.
You could, yeah, theoretically you'd beat the game, but you know, I remember it probably took us about a year, me and my brother Paul, just chipping away at it and working, trying all different stuff, and I remember TikTok clock holding us back for a long time.
Oh, that level sucks.
Yep, and I think it was that one and the rainbow one that were, you know, we would play that for hours.
Oh, the floating ship,
fruitless efforts. Rainbow. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Those were very difficult levels. Some of the challenges are very hard. They're still very hard.
Right. And without one of the strategy guides, I mean, it's next to impossible to, especially in the clock level where it's all about timing and,
right.
you know, it's, you have to move this and then you have 30 seconds to get to here and, you know.
Right. Yeah. They also bring into this game the blocks to fill in from Super Mario World. So you can fill in the blocks to get the flying cap and then the metal cap and then the invisible cap. Is there any other caps that I'm missing? I think that's it.
Is there the steel cap?
Yeah,
it's metal cap.
Metal Mario.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that being a big deal.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was interesting at the time because I thought that, besides the flying, because flying in a 3D space is super interesting, even though it's hard to control, the metal one was interesting because it changes the physics in the water.
Exactly. Yeah, I thought that was real.
Yeah, because you sink to the bottom.
Right?
Yeah. It was interesting for the time, for sure.
Yeah, so there's like...
It's very unpleasant you drown in this game. Very unpleasant.
Yeah, he's like, he seriously drowns.
Yeah, not comfortable when you were a kid.
Yeah, no, the whole, you know, throwing himself around and gasping for air was definitely a little traumatic.
Watch that gauge get blue and then dark blue, and you're like, oh no.
He probably has a worse death than Sonic does in the Sonic games. Sonic is, although Sonic feels like it's more...
Sonic just kind of goes flat and pops up in the air and falls off the screen.
He's got his mouth open. But he also, I would say that Sonic's, when he's drowns, it's more anxiety riddled.
Yeah.
Because of the music, it's like, dun 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 dun. Then he dies. But yeah, he dies. Mario dies. Speaking of the water level, one of the really cool things that I thought was... There's a one of the first like three or four levels is a water level where there's like a giant fish that's stuck, and you have to get him out.
An eel.
Yeah, he's like scary. Scary looking.
Yeah.
He's got a star on the back of his tail.
I think you're right. I think that is the third level.
Yeah, and you have to go into a sunken ship and you have to explore it, and then he comes out and you're my god.
That's a great level.
That's a good level. Trying to think of some other levels. There's the haunted houses, and that isn't very good.
No. Yeah, I remember the basement with the sand level for some reason. I think it was the sixth or seventh level.
Oh, that was a good one. Yeah.
That one I played the shit out. I don't know why.
With the pyramid?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was something in there that was slowing me down.
There was hands that you had to fight that was like a boss, and it was like one of the only bosses in the game.
There's some flying shy guys, right, in that level.
Yeah.
That one, the music in that level is really good.
Yeah.
I remember trying to get to the top of the pyramid to get a star.
There's a magic carpet. Isn't there?
Maybe.
When you get in the pyramid, that's when, you know, obviously the pyramid's a lot bigger once you're inside and all sorts of bullshit like that. You're riding the fucking carpet up in there and shit.
And there are three Bowser levels, I think. So there's one in the first area, there's one in the basement, and there's one up above.
Yep.
I think.
You're right.
Yeah. And then you have to, there's pretty straightforward linear levels. There are stars in the levels.
Yep.
If you get 8 coins, you can get a star, 8 red coins. And then you have to fight Bowser, and essentially it's the same fight every time. You just spin him around and throw him at bombs. But that's still pretty iconic.
Yeah.
Right. And that music is like also really dope.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, those Bowser fights are great.
And he would go, woo, woo, woo.
And you had all the Bowser levels had 3 stars because it was, you get the 8 red coins, you can get 100 coins, and then you get the one for beating Bowser.
Oh, yeah. You're right.
Not so much a level, but how much time did you guys spend with the flying cap outside of the castle, just trying to fly around to the outside of the castle
where you could go? Yeah. So much time. Yeah.
Probably 24 hours of my life.
Just like thinking and like finding like some secret or something. Like, I mean, you can't think of like any other game that you played at that time where you had like that freedom to explore like that.
I kind of forgot about that, but because I didn't play it that much, when I think my cousin beat it, I went back and he had the flying cap. Mm. And I was like, this is all I want to do. I don't care about playing the game.
You could jump in the moat too. And there was, you know, you could raise the water and lower the water and get to certain little hidden areas and shit. And I thought that stuff was, you know, way ahead of its time.
There was also like the fire world, was it? No, it was the sand world was like a hidden world because you follow the rabbit around the corner and you jump through the wall.
And yes.
It's just, there's no sign, but it's, they lead you there. Yeah. You know it's
right.
Because they lead you there, you know it's there.
I think that's 8.
And then there's the fire world, which is another one of my, I like that one a lot as well. That one's quite challenging with the fire face.
I remember the one, it had the spiders in the water. I think it was like World 13 or something like that. And that one, I remember just playing that for forever, just trying to figure out how to get anything done in that level because
the water up and down.
So many different options and would just tie you up for hours.
I always hated water levels in N64 games. Hated them.
Right.
Zelda. Water Temple. Yeah.
Terrible. One thing we didn't mention is that we talked a lot about the camera, but this was the launch title for the N64. The N64 had something different that other games platforms didn't at the time, like PlayStation, which was the analog stick. Nights into Dreams came out a month before this, which had an analog stick, but the N64 first had the first like real good use of the analog stick for Super Mario 64. So just being able to move and not just be able to jump and run and whatever, but be able to move a little your analog stick a little bit and walk, and then just very fine-tune the way you moved around in a 3D environment was insane at the time. If you go back, like we played Resident Evil for this podcast, and that game, if you play with tank controls, it is miserable. So tank controls, as we explained on that, if you pressed left or right, you would move the character's whole body left and to the right, and up and down would be forward and backwards. As opposed to analog stick, you just move in the direction that you want to go.
Right.
So it was like that at the time was fucking mind blowing. And this is the N64 launch games we're talking about. None of the games incorporated the 4-player functionality that the N64 had, which was also like a crazy feature at the time.
Right.
So
yeah, GoldenEye made like great use out of that. I remember.
Yeah. So, I mean, the analog stick just. I remember when that came out, I was like, wow, this is crazy.
Run in perfect circles around and around and around.
Yeah, there's like certain moments where I'm like, I'm living in the future. And that was one of the moments where I'm like, I am now living in the future.
Yeah, just playing around with Mario's moves. I remember on that first Bob-omb level, like running in circles and then like hitting whatever combo you had to like all of a sudden backflip in certain levels too. And I would just mess around with that.
Oh, it was super satisfying too with the... I'm thinking of Zelda, I think. The eyeballs in Zelda when you had to run around them and they blow up.
Oh, yeah.
Or maybe that was Mario Brothers. I can't remember. I'm confusing them.
Yeah, I think it was Zelda.
That's Zelda. Yeah, okay. But yeah, that's super satisfying with the analog stick. Yeah, crazy.
But this is probably the only game that, like, kind of similar to what I just said, but like the flying cap outside the castle. Like, I mean, I bet we all, probably whether we're in the castle or in levels, like you had so many mechanics like available to you. That you were just like, what is, almost like in like a Tony Hawk style, even though you weren't getting points for it. It's pretty much just like, what is the coolest move I can do in a level? Like, what is like the coolest like backflip off like a high place I can do?
Yeah, you know,
like,
I mean,
testing the limits of like what was available to you.
I would do that type of stuff in like a Grand Theft Auto game.
Yeah.
Like just like fuck around with the environment. Tony Hawk game's a good example. But yeah, there's a lot. It's like a sandbox.
Right.
Breath of the Wild most recently was like that for me because you get all these like tools to fuck around with the physics. So you're like, what can I do that's wicked strange that makes that can break this world or not break it but do something wild.
Yeah, Breath of the Wild, you could just look at something and be like, can I climb that way off in the distance? And you work your way over there and you might have to do some weird things, but you could get to the top of most anything there.
Or I want to launch myself like a rocket with this rock
right
an incredible distance from up really high.
That was another cool part of Mario 64 was shooting yourself in those cannons. And you would launch yourself, you know, all across the whole level.
I will quickly point out, I have the Super Mario 64 DS version.
Yep, me too.
That game's terrible.
Yep.
Game's real bad. They want you to, the way they want you to play that game is with a stylus.
Oh.
That's how they invented that game. So they have, they want you to use a stylus like you would a analog stick. On the touch screen, it's really bad.
That's
not good. Really hard to play. So needless to say, I didn't get very far in that one. Mm-hmm. I also bought recently a copy of Super Mario 64 off eBay that was totally a reproduction that somebody has been selling as a real cart. So definitely look out for that if you're trying to buy this game secondhand market. It still works. It's just not the original game. And I would say 85% of the people would look at it and be like, oh, that's a real game. It is not. It's not the real game.
Yeah.
You can just tell.
You won't fool anybody at this table.
It's like the label, the
I bet it weighs material. Less. I bet it's a thinner plastic.
Yeah. It's terrible. But
fuck
yes,
that.
Mario 64.
That.
Anybody else have anything they want to say about Mario 64?
Do you think I remember playing the game thinking that the Bowser boss fights were actually some of the more fun. They weren't difficult, but I thought they were some of the more fun boss fights I ever had. I mean, what do you guys think about the boss fights?
Absolutely.
Just like how open free roaming they were.
The difference in size between Mario and Bowser was ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to be able to manipulate somebody that much bigger than Mario was, you know, it was groundbreaking for the time. To be able to swing him around and...
Yeah, pop up behind him, grab him by the tail, throw him around into a bomb.
You know, like, just those mechanics alone were very cool.
Same with King Bombob. You know, like, you sneak up behind him, you hit him, you try to throw him off the top of the mountain.
Right.
Like, you're this tiny little guy.
Yep. The big block, I think that's World 2, maybe,
The Thwomp, or...
Thwomp.
Yes.
Where you gotta make him go face down and then pound his back.
Yep.
Yeah. Bowser was great. Everything about that stage, the music is so good for that stage. I don't know why. It's just like the 90s, like, it's just very 90s. It feels very 90s, the music. And then on top of it, the noises he makes are like, whoa, 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 whoa. And when you grab him, he goes, no. It's sort of like, no, but I don't know if it's actually no. Yeah. And then you have to
That was really good.
You have to run around behind him and grab his tail, and then you have to twist the analog stick in a circle to make him spin in a circle, which was like, at the time, I was like, this is great.
I think it's really good. I think we're talking a lot about like the freedom Mario 64 gave you. Like, did you guys find that, like, for, especially with like in like the first year of the Nintendo 64, like, were you, I found myself always comparing every future Nintendo 64 game back to Mario 64 and the freedom that it gave me, and like sometimes I found it a little bit more restrictive, and sometimes I found it a little bit more like, did it set too high of a bar with some of the other Nintendo 64 games around its time?
I will say that this game obviously influenced Banjo-Kazooie, which is a game I love and probably played more than Mario 64, because I was just obsessed with that game for whatever reason. I think it was one of my favorite games back then, but it borrowed so much from Mario, and like,
I set the standard for 3D platformers still to today.
Absolutely. And it's the same idea. Like, you collect puzzle pieces, there's like different like modes you can enter to like have different abilities, you go back to old areas, you get more, you know, loot as you go along.
Yeah, Banjo-Kazooie is definitely one of the, without a doubt, the best 3D games for Nintendo 64. But then, you know, you start going down the rabbit hole, like, you know, at the bottom is Turok, in my opinion.
Right. Yeah. This is where I was getting was, like, Turok was, like, kind of like a clunker that came out, like, the same time.
Exactly. And, you know, comparing that to Mario.
Came out, like, 6 months after.
There was no... No argument.
It's super impressive to me, too, that Super Mario 64 has zero fog.
Yes.
Think about it. For a Nintendo 64 game, they had fog, so you couldn't see far. The way they designed Super Mario 64 was such that everything was tight together, so you didn't need fog.
Yeah.
So, like, even the first level, which seems like it's far, no fog. So it's kind of like a monumental feat for the time to do this. Like, you play, like, a game like... I don't know. I'm trying to think of what other games have fog.
Turok was the king of fog.
Well, Silent Hill might be the king of fog, but yes, Turok.
That's planned fog versus unplanned fog.
Right.
So.
And then even Legend of Zelda, you know, comes a couple of years later, Ocarina of Time. But, like, they learned the lessons from Mario 64, like, how to create a really, like, compelling, fun, contained 3D environment. And you can just explore.
And it's all open.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a very important thing for today's games.
Yeah.
I don't think any game could... I think they get there, but this was such a big step in video games. And I think every Super Mario game since then has been trying to get back to Super Mario 64 somehow. So.
Yeah, going into this podcast, I was kind of thinking, because I never played the earlier Super Marios, and because I didn't have those systems at the time, and I was kind of wondering if you guys were going to put Mario 64 at the top among all the Super Marios. And
maybe.
I don't know.
We'll get there.
I was kind of, well, we'll see. Yeah, but I was kind of surprised because, you know, I kind of just assumed like this one came in the middle. Like, obviously, it's 3D and it was so revolutionary, but does it stand up to the early games?
I think that's good. I mean, I think I more remember playing Super Mario 3 first and then playing Super Mario 1 and 2, But I remember playing Super Mario 3 going, like, oh, this is, like, the greatest game I've ever played.
Yeah.
And then Super Mario World came with, like, the Super Nintendo, and I was like, oh, that's it. They took Super Mario 3. They pushed the boundaries.
Yep.
But then I also felt the same feelings when I played Super Mario 64. I was like, well, they just took Super Mario World and just upped the ante. Was that your experience? I mean, as we are at the same age?
No. So my experience was that Super Mario Brothers was just, I was so young, and that was like my first video game experience, like true video game experience, Super Mario Brothers. I remember getting that when I was like 4. So I remember that game. Super Mario Brothers 3, I was like, Super Mario Brothers 2, I didn't even get that game, did not care about it at the time.
Yeah.
Super Mario Bros. 3 was like mind-blowing because how good it looked for a Nintendo game.
Yep.
Super Mario World came out and I wasn't blown away because it just seemed like it was just a little like half step above what Super Mario Bros. 3 was. It's because it's doing the same thing. When Super Mario 64 came out, it was an entirely different thing. It was this open 3D world where you're playing in what are essentially dioramas that they set up. There's actually a really cool, I think it's a book that came out in Japan of Super Mario 64 that has 3D sculptures of all the levels. And they're all like photographed. It's very like photorealistic levels that are all 3D built with like clay and modeling stuff. It's very, very cool looking. But these are all like dioramas of like a central thing. It's very, very different from what Super Mario World was. And in addition, like when just the formula. So Super Mario World, you have to go through a level and get to the end and that's it. Sometimes you can find a secret and go down a different path or unlock something. But Super Mario 64 is you have these fully fleshed out levels that you have to find a number of different objectives in.
Sure, yeah.
And those things might unlock as you play them over and over again. But there are like a certain number of stages, and they might seem like it's a small number, but they're so big and dense, filled with stuff, and have so many different challenges that it's like a completely different ball game.
Right. We weren't playing a lot of like objective based games like back then. I think being in that immersive world and like the objectives was just such a new you couldn't even comprehend like how like expansive like this world could be now.
I've kind of been thinking about this because I've been playing Sekiro recently, and this is a brand new game. It's a From Software game, guys who do Dark Souls, and there's more of a prescriptive path in this game, but like a lot of it is just like, oh, I found a new area, like let me go down here, what's here, oh, there's a boss in here. And in a certain, you know, kind of respect, I'm like, this is kind of like Mario. Like, I'm a, you know, samurai or ninja warrior going through feudal Japan. Right. But, like, I'm just kind of in this sandbox, and there are enemies, and there are worlds, and there's different challenges I have to do. But there's, like, it's kind of up to me to do it and explore it and open up new areas.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's hyperbole to say that 99.99% of 3D games that currently exist owe some debt of gratitude to Super Mario 64. It's just highly of the games on our list, it is the most influential game, I would say, by far, which leads us into our ranking discussion.
What a segue.
Where this goes where this goes into our on our list, which goes from The Legend of Zelda down to pro wrestling. Legend of Zelda for Nintendo. This is our, how many N64 games are on our list? GoldenEye?
No Mercy.
WWF No Mercy.
Star Fox
64.
That's it, right?
Pokemon Snap.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is our fifth N64 game that we're adding to the list. And it's one of the best N64 games, if not the best. Although there's probably some Ocarina of Time fans in this room right now. I'm looking at you, Steve.
Oh, yeah, I would, yeah. When we get to that game, like right now I'm thinking this goes at the top of the list, but in the back of my mind I'm thinking until Ocarina of Time comes.
So does this go on the top of the list? Chris, you said you had a hot take for this.
I guess it's not that hot anymore because I was going to like kind of try to play off the whole like being somewhat contrarian, keep some like mystery going, like is this better than Legend of Zelda or not better than Legend of Zelda? But you know what? It is better than Legend of Zelda. It's number one to me.
Dan, where do you think this goes?
Hands down, number one.
I think it's hands down number one as well.
I don't really think it's a controversial opinion.
No, this is like, this legitimately is like one of the top five games of all time.
But, you know, like to what you guys were saying earlier about how influential it is on 3D games today, it's not to say that, you know, a side-scrolling game, like, you know, there's, what were we talking about earlier? It was Braid and Super Meat Boy and Cuphead and stuff like that. You know, they're still popular and they're still great games, but this changed everything. Yes. Everything. And now, whether you're playing Assassin's Creed or, you know, Black Ops or any of this shit, it's all based around that 3D camera, that little guy in the cloud filming everything.
I'm trying to think of other games outside of Super Mario Brothers and Super Mario Brothers 3 that might be 2D above Super Mario 64 on the all-time list. Spitballing. Like 2D games. I think that maybe Tetris, but that's not like a platformer.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think what makes this game unique is the fact that it's like, this is a game that, like, when you were a kid or even now, like when you kind of look back at it historically, like, this told you like how big games could be, right? And it's like you don't have many games that can give you that. Like, you have this. I think you could put like Grand Theft Auto 3 in a different boat. I think you could put Final Fantasy 7 in its own category. And then like, but after that though, I think it's kind of like maybe you have like not even Halo. I think you have like a Call of Duty game that says like this is like how big and how cinematic and just how immersive games could be. It's like you don't have many games that come along that kind of push to a new level. And I think this was like a game that I think we all were just like, wow, shit, this is uncharted territory.
You think about like a game like Skyrim, which is known for being this huge, like fully fleshed out immersive world, it's a Mario 64 skin to a certain extent. Like,
there are some games that I don't know if they owe their existence to Mario 64 and they would be near the top. So I'm thinking of a game like Metal Gear Solid, which doesn't have the camera, same type of camera, and it's very, very cinematic, and blew my mind at the time to play that game. Tetris is another one, but that's just because it's endured so much, and it's like been reformulated a million fucking times. Trying to think of like other ones. There's like Half-Life 2, but that was a first-person game, and that introduced a lot of like cinematic elements. There are games that could touch this game.
Oh yeah. I don't necessarily think this is the best game of all time. In fact, I don't. I think that Ocarina of Time is the better game. Like, no question. But
we'll get there.
But we'll get there.
This is one of the most innovative games of all time.
Yeah.
Innovative
games.
And I listened to the Pilot Wings episode and you guys talk about how that was kind of like a tech demo game at the time, and Pilot Wings 64 also was the other release game and was a tech demo. This is kind of a tech demo too. Like, this just showed you what the future of video games was gonna be. Like, this is 3D.
Could you imagine Nintendo being flopping their nuts out on the table and being like, this is the future of video games? Like, that was what they did.
That's what they did. Yeah. And they were
like the first game. They fucking blew people away. Mm-hmm. First game for N64, and then the N64 kind of faded away because they only had like two other games.
And they did it with Mario. They did it with Mario. They didn't create this like new IP that was like, oh, 3D is this. It's like, no, we're gonna take our wheelhouse here and just show you what we can do.
I would love a new Mario Maker that can do Mario 64.
It'd be so hard.
Yeah. It'd be awesome.
You could do, I mean, actually, you know, back to Halo. Like, they had that with Halo. You could do like the Forge, and you could create your own 3D map in Halo. It's like more like cookie cutter. It's like we have these type of buildings and obstacles.
So that's right. You set them goals, you know, you build terrains, you can get there.
Yeah, you can do that.
I'm happy with Mario Maker 2. It's coming out. That game was super fun when they made the original Mario Maker.
I think every major Nintendo property needs a
maker.
Yeah,
Legend of Zelda needs a maker.
Zelda, Mega Man, well, I mean, granted, we are getting away from Nintendo properties, but I mean, like, Mega Man, Castlevania, like, all those would be
Metroid.
Awesome. Yeah, exactly. All those would be awesome to have maker properties.
Yeah, the Nintendo just needs to work on with the maker stuff is how they socialize levels, because the setup for the original one was terrible. It's hard to surface good levels, but we're getting off topic. So Do we want? Do we? This is game is number one on our list. This is the baddest game.
Yep.
This is the baddest game. Yeah.
It is.
So this is officially our new number one.
Until Paperboy Maker comes out.
Until Paperboy Maker comes out, then
this is the baddest.
We're gonna have the baddest game on our list is Super Mario 64.
We'll get Cuphead up there again. Don't worry.
Cuphead will be number five shortly.
Not if No Mercy has anything to say about it.
Be number six. We just got off recording for everybody at home the reshuffle episode, so
it's all fresh,
hot on our minds. So I want to thank Dan.
Always a pleasure to be here, Mike.
I want to thank Steve.
Thanks, Mike. Great cotton.
Chris, thank you. Thank you so much. We've added one of the great, like truly one of the greatest games. I think this is one of the of our list. I don't think any of these other games are like at the end of the day would be in the top 25. Maybe The Legend of Zelda. And maybe GoldenEye.
GoldenEye, yeah.
But maybe.
Top 25?
Or maybe definitely not top 10, I don't think.
Resident Evil?
No.
I think Final Fantasy IV has a...
Nope. Mega There's Man other 16-bit RPGs that are better.
If we're talking about top 25, I think Final Fantasy IV has a claim to lay.
No.
I think Mega Man 2 obviously would fit in the top 25. If you went with a global ranking.
Yeah.
All day.
Yeah. I agree with that.
We'll see. Where you add another one. Mega Man is now number 7. Actually, yes, it's number 7 on our list. So we've pushed it down one. But anyways, this is all this is conjecture for another day. Thank you all for joining us. Thank you, Dos Chiquini Jr., for your music up to this episode. And
he's welcome.
Yeah, follow us on Twitter. It's at It's So Bad Pod. You can also find the complete endless list on our Medium page. It's linked in the podcast description. And you can email us at itsobadpod@gmail.com. You all need to email us your requests. But yes, we'll be back next week with another episode. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks for joining us. Goodbye. This has been a long fucking day.